This is Connections on this Tuesday morning here, February 4, during day after the Iowa, whatever that was, yesterday. I'm Rick Moore, along with Josh Arnold, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposkin. And of course, Bill Newell is here as well, joining us for our morning news chat. We also will be checking in a little while with our interviewees, Ken Reel, who is the executive director of the Cape Ann Chamber of Commerce. Yes. They have a move coming up. And then you'll be talking with Lise Breen.
Lise Breen, who is an historical researcher and has a lot to share with us about the impact slavery had on commerce in Cape Ann.
All right, and Bill, you've got a guest coming up this morning as well.
Yeah, we have Dave Radigan, writer and comedian, and I'll hold off on what we'll talk about, but because I don't want people to click, it has to do with it's on the coronavirus of all things, but okay. That's what we have, yeah.
All right, well, I'm sure he's got a particular take on it.
Ask him to tell you the Rodney Dangerfield story sometime. He interviewed Rodney Dangerfield.
Okay.
All right.
Well,
I will do that. Yeah.
Guys, where do you want to start? Because, woke up this morning checking out all the news apps and so on. I usually start with the Associated Press, and, the lead headline is Democrat Fiasco. So what's your take on that, Bill?
Well, I was watching TV last night, and, we were watching something. I forgot what it was. And I said, well, I'll flip over to the news, see what's going on. And they obviously Iowa caucuses was in the news. And I said, should I have to go? No, I don't think so. that was the best move that I think
yes.
I've made in a long time.
Josh?
Because there are no results yet, as of this moment, So, whatever it is, it's an app issue, apparently.
Well, they're going to blame it on something, but it's interesting because they don't know. But what I found interesting was the tenor of the thing was they were trying to say who they thought was doing well, but they were also it seemed like the Democratic establishment was circling their wagons in fear that Bernie was going to win, and that this could set the table for future wins and so forth.
Yeah, I mean, is there a conspiracy theory out there that the Democratic Party is against Bernie Sanders? A lot of folks are saying that. I mean, all kinds of people are saying that, and the Des Moines Register poll is spiked on Saturday for whatever reason, and now the caucuses, we get no results because a Bernie win in Iowa coupled with a Bernie lead in New Hampshire and a likely win in New Hampshire in the primary there, he'd be tough to stop, it would seem to me. I mean, that's historically what's happened. You win both of those, you're tough to stop. And if the Democratic Party doesn't want Bernie, plus you also have, it's the Clinton people that developed the app.
Oh, come on. That's not.
No, it is. It is the Clinton people, that developed the app, and it's the same app that they're planning to use in Nevada. That's what I hear.
Oh, come on. That's too funny.
We're off to a roaring in this election, that's for sure. My goodness gracious.
One of the things that they were about last night would end up with nobody having a clear win. It's over, and well, they go to a broken convention.
Yeah, well, that's what folks are saying. Obviously, right now, that's probably what the Democratic Party would hope for is a broken convention and not a Bernie runaway with the nomination.
So, if there's a broken convention, does that bring Hillary back into the play?
Yeah, a broken or a brokered? What do you say, John?
Well, they may be one and the same, unfortunately, but yeah.
Yeah, really. Yeah, exactly, yeah. I don't know. I mean, she clearly would want to come back in, so it's just amazing, isn't it? But you never know what's going to happen.
Bill, I want to turn our attention quickly here to sports. So I just want to mention Mike Grenier has a terrific article in today's Salem News regarding Scoonie Penn. We talked with Mike about a week and a half ago, after he had interviewed Scoonie Penn at a game at the Garden, and Phil Stacey published that today in the Salem News sports section. I want to mention that and you know, direct people to that? Because obviously, you know, Scooney Penn, a local kid, done good from Salem High School. I know you covered him back in the day.
You know, it's funny. Actually, you know something? I was actually out by the time Scooney Penn came around, to be honest with you. I did know Scooney Penn.
Ah,
I was
that's
kind
right.
of out of the picture at that,
okay.
by that point.
You were Rick Brunson.
Rick Brunson I covered, yeah.
Yeah,
Rick
right.
Brunson was,
right.
Loved Rick Brunson, yeah.
All right, so.
But, yeah, I was kind of out of loop. The other note is Pat Connaughton from the prep is going to be doing the NBA slam dunk contest.
Okay.
Nominated to do that. So that's huge news, and Nick Giannino notes that in our Salem News podcast that will be up at 11 o'clock this morning.
Excellent, excellent. Well, the other thing is I want to ask you both, I'm going to do this is a question now to see if you can know, if you know what the answer. Who am I? I'm not going anywhere.
Oh, yeah.
Anybody?
Tom Brady.
Ah, all right. You saw the commercial then.
Yeah.
Okay. Bill, you know, you mentioned you were talking about the halftime show. I didn't see 1 second of the halftime show, but from all accounts, it was pretty good.
You know, it's not my kind of entertainment. I don't know. I mean, I was, you know, people would have been, in years past, people would have been bummed for days, but instead, I don't think they are. You know, if we're on to something. We're on to impeachment. We're on to the Iowa caucuses. We're on to the State of the Union. Whatever. It's funny. I don't really have an opinion on the halftime show. I mean, it was a little strange, but I guess it was well received though.
I have never seen one. I've seen bits and pieces. I saw bits and pieces of The Who, and there was one other one, Lady Gaga, I think. And that's it. I tend not to watch them. I tend not to watch the talking heads 3.5 hours pregame, and I just want to watch the game.
I watch for a wardrobe malfunction.
Yeah.
You know,
did you? Okay, I didn't see that one.
I was going to just ask.
Didn't see that one. Well, Bill, we got a big hockey game coming up tomorrow night that I do want to mention. That'll be Marblehead at Gloucester. We have both coaches. We talked with both coaches last night, Chris Wells of Marblehead, Derek Geary of Gloucester. And a lot of stuff coming up on the website. And you said you've got the Salem News podcast coming up.
Yeah, we have that. Plus, Andy Carboni joins us at the top of the hour to discuss the Red Sox. And I am stunned that they do not have a manager yet. But he has one reason why they may not have one yet. But check it out. At 11 this morning.
All right. I know you're busy, Bill. Thanks. We'll talk to you later on.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right.
Where does Mookie Betts go? Los Angeles?
They're talking Dodgers.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Another one I can't understand. I don't get it.
Well, here's my prediction. Wherever they trade him to, I'm thinking it's the Dodgers. I think he gets hurt this year. I think he gets hurt and he gets like a Jim Rice kind of hit on the wrist or something like that, and he has a mediocre year. Just
wow.
Yeah. Okay.
Hey, I got a question. Was Alex Cora seen in Iowa last night? I don't know.
Wait, you know, I keep checking Twitter and I keep checking the apps for that. We'll find out. Bill, do have a good day.
You too. Okay,
all right. Talk to you later. Bill Newell here on MSO. Coming up, our first interview is Josh will be talking to the Cape Ann. I almost said YMCA. Cape Ann Chamber of Commerce Executive Director Ken Reel.
Harrington Trophy has been rewarding the North Shore for over 30 years with quality custom awards, screen printing, embroidery, and more. We pride our family-owned business on our exceptional customer service and quality products for the right price. Custom t-shirts, sweatshirts, warm-up suits, hats, along with the area's top trophies, plaques, glass awards, we are the one-stop shop for end-of-the-year banquets or advertising your small business through apparel. Come see us at Harrington Trophy, Chestnut Street, Lynn, or harringtontrophy.com.
Enjoy the taste of summer all year round at Cherry Farm Creamery. Pick up an ice cream cake for that special occasion. Cherry Farm Creamery offers the best ice cream right off Route 128 on Conant Street in Danvers. Or visit them at cherryfarmcreamery.com. Catch the big names in North Shore news and sports on MSO News Sports Podcasts, the North Shore's podcast leader for both news and sports features, connecting you to the North Shore.
Welcome back to Connections, and our first guest is Ken Reel, who is the Executive Director of the Cape Ann Chamber of Commerce. Ken, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Josh. Good to be on.
Well, lots going on in the Cape Ann Chamber of Commerce, not the least of which is you're physically moving after spending many years down the fort, if you will. I remember when that used to be on Main Street.
Yeah, right. That was a long time ago, Josh. You got a good memory.
Yeah. was with the where Howard Frisch is now. But,
that's right.
But in that area, but it was I think Cape Port Investment owned the building then.
Okay.
But anyway, interestingly enough, I was on your website the other night, and I was mm-hmm. looking at your past presidents of the club.
Yeah.
And it was interesting, particularly going back, 20, 30 or more mm-hmm. years. How many of those were Rotarians?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because I'm doing the history of the club, and a lot of overlap there. But anyway,
terrific partnership between the two organizations.
Yeah, so tell us about the move, and tell us what's going on with the chamber.
Sure. So there is a lot going on at the chamber, and frankly, with all of Cape Ann, and the move is very exciting. This will be the biggest move this organization has ever made. The move from Main Street was huge for us 33 years ago, coincidentally. And we are now located at 33 Commercial Street, right next to the Beauport Hotel, and this location is fantastic. You know, we've done a lot of good work out of here, and more than doubled our membership, and done some really great things economically and with our schools. But with regard to a big part of our work, we do a lot with our visitors and the visitor-based economy, and we have a very popular visitor center here. And we're a little off the beaten track. You know, you got to turn off of Rogers on the Commercial. And so we're more of a destination. Where we are moving, right on the corner of Harbor Loop and Rogers Street, we're a drive-by. And
yeah.
So visitors and our locals both will be, you know, literally seeing us every time that we're up and down Rogers Street. And a much more visible location, a larger location because the chamber has grown so much. And we went up by more than 15% last year alone to over 1,000 members, which makes us to be the largest chamber on the North Shore and the fifth largest in the Commonwealth.
Wow.
Which is quite a statement for a relatively small demographic. You know, we represent the four Cape Ann communities, Gloucester, Rockport, Essex, and Manchester, and have a number of businesses in our neighboring communities, communities like Beverly and Ipswich and Rowley and Danvers, and of course we've got some big national businesses as well, but our majority of our membership, as you can imagine, come from the Cape Ann communities. And so this location will allow us to better serve our membership, both on and off of Cape Ann.
Is there an economic impact to the chamber too? Is this a more financially viable than the other location?
Yep, we'll be able to better apply our member contributions back to our programs and services. And so that's an exciting part about the move as well.
And
now there's some additional challenges there. Because we're so visible, we expect to have many more people in our organization, which is terrific. We have to think about how we're going to manage, for example, two new public restrooms.
Yeah.
Which is, on the one hand, it's fantastic to offer them to the downtown. It's just we expect a lot of use out of those rooms, restrooms. So that's going to be something new for us.
When you mentioned at the outset of the program the difference between a drive-by and a destination, and I thought it was an interesting concept. How much of that is something that chambers of commerce do when they're contemplating where they're going to locate? Is it more, some places might have it in a strip mall or a mall or what have you, or is it being a drive-by the exception, or is that more the rule in terms of what chambers endeavor to do?
Well, what is different about this chamber, and there's a couple of others like us on the North Shore and certainly around the state, but because of our very strong visitor economy aspect of our mission,
yep.
And our visitor center that we have here that represents all of Cape Ann, it's important that our visitors can find us easily. And so if we were, you know, out of the way or within another larger, let's say it's a office park,
yeah,
a larger building, it's just that much harder for visitors to find us. And so for a number of chambers that don't have a strong visitor priority, it's not that big a deal as long as a membership can find the chamber.
Yeah.
But for us, it's critically important because we do, right, even from our current location, we will personally have more than 10,000 visitors through our visitor center.
Wow.
In our new location, we'll double that number easily because people will be driving by. And that, as you know, Roger Street is a pretty busy street. And also being right on the corner of Harbor Loop, we would expect a lot of visitors to find us as they are, you know, transversing around Harbor Loop, and frankly help visitors find Harbor Loop and all of downtown Gloucester. So we'll be in a much better position to serve
the
community.
How close are you to the water, and how close are you to Dunkin' Donuts?
We are right across the street from the Walgreens Plaza, so we're probably equidistant.
Yeah.
To Dunkin' Donuts and the water as a crow flies a couple hundred yards.
That's great.
In either direction. And so really nicely located between, again, downtown Gloucester and the harbor, and helping to put people on Harbor Loop, Maritime Gloucester, the schooners that are there, the restaurants. And it's really it's going to be a great location for us.
Well, it's funny because we had a class reunion a few years back, and we had the Gloucester House, and but some of the members said, "Oh well, we went over to Scott Alexander's at Beacon Marine. We took a boat over."
Yeah.
But so it'll be interesting with we are that much closer to the water. You know, what kind of traffic that draws to for you coming up. What else is, I know we got a couple of minutes left, what else is happening with the chamber? You've got some other fundraising and St. Patrick's Night and some other things happening.
Yeah, so we're probably best known, again, aside from our regional promotion with all of our, everything we do in print and our websites, we're best known for our events, which is terrific on the one hand, because we still do many of the larger events on Cape Ann. We've got the block parties that we are already planning for this summer. We do three of those in downtown Gloucester, closing off Main Street in July and August and September. We do Waterfront Festival here, and then in other communities, we do Festival by the Sea in Manchester and the Essex Clam Fest. And then, as you say, we do a number of smaller community events, some of which are fundraisers, but have a lot of community involvement. And the one that's coming up in the nearest term is called our Irish Sweepstakes, where literally we give away $20,000 in cash in about half an hour at the Gloucester House. We've been there now for several years, and that is just a fun night. We will have standing room only at the Gloucester House. And that's coming up in the middle of March. I think it's on the 18th this year.
And people,
and then,
people
and then we go right into our spring events. Our major education fundraiser. We do a golf tournament at Bass Rocks, and that's a wonderful event. Last year we had 120 golfers, and terrific participation. And that funds everything that we do. All of our scholarships. We give away 6 scholarships. And we have a business women's group that last year gave away 2 additional scholarships for women that were continuing their education. And working with our local schools, we've got a very strong business education collaborative, and we meet monthly with all 3 of our local school systems and Essex Tech. Pat Thorpe is president of Bank Gloucester. He chairs that collaborative, as he has for a number of years. And we have our now 6th annual career and college fair coming up the week before the Irish Sweepstakes on the 11th.
Great.
And we'll see 75 colleges at that event, and I bring in the business community so that it's not just about going to college or getting a higher ed degree, but thinking about what are you going to do longer term as a career field, and understanding all the opportunities that are available to our young people around Cape Ann.
That's great.
We'll have 60 professionals there being able to represent, talk about their career field and how they got into their positions. And so it's a particularly interesting, I think, and valuable part of that event. It's a lot of work, but very rewarding. And we do that at Gloucester High at their field house.
Great.
We'll have upwards of 1,000 people at that another education event. It's very rewarding.
Super. That's great. Well, I want to thank you for being a guest on Connections, and look forward to your continued success as the executive director and a very successful move, and we'll have to have you back maybe early summer. You can report in and tell us how things are going then.
We'd love to do that. By then, we'll be in a new location.
Great, Ken.
Catch up.
Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Josh.
Right,
take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Excuse me. I heard that part that, you know, they should be in their new location by summer. Did he give a date?
He didn't. I should have asked.
No. He just said by summer, I believe. Yeah. So that's good. Yeah, and you know where the Bill, I think it was called Bill's Whale Watch. You know where that was?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's going to be where it is.
Yeah. Oh,
right there.
Great.
Yeah. So it's actually midway between the waterfront and Dunkin' Donuts. Splits it right down the middle. Very easy to get to. I want to mention a couple of events coming up. We're going to talk about one of them on Thursday, maybe both, I don't know. But there is something that has piqued my interest, and that's called the Merrimack River Eagle Festival. Mm. There is... An eagle in West Gloucester that I may have seen, but people have seen, and I'm not sure if I did or not. But it's really it's a majestic animal that I haven't seen yet, and I want to see one. We've seen where I live in West Gloucester. We've seen owls. We've got a couple of red-tail hawks that live in the area, and we've seen, of course, coyotes and all kinds of wildlife. And we got bird feeders out back. But I haven't seen an eagle yet, and this Merrimack River Eagle Festival is taking place on February 15. I believe that's Saturday. I think 14th is a... I don't know if I have that right or not. I think the 14th is a Friday, so I think it's Saturday. And you can get information. It's Mass Audubon is sponsoring this at the Joppa Flats Education Center, and what I would suggest you do is go to massaudubon.org and then search for the Joppa Flats Education Center. The Merrimack River Eagle Festival is being held on February 15, and they're hosting a grand event marking the return of the eagles. They come back apparently every winter, and so they're particularly abundant in the Newburyport area. And my wife, in fact, saw one on the way to work last week and called me, and I was very envious. And she was able to see this gigantic raptor, I guess as it's called. So that's kind of cool. And I'm going to be talking with member of the Essex County Ornithological Club, who will be conducting a winter walk on, I believe it's February 17, I believe it's President's Day in Ipswich. His name is Jim Berry, and really looking forward to that. He's going to explain what they do on their walk. Everybody's invited. I think it's free to the public, but we'll find that out as well. And this guy is an encyclopedia of avians. He's got incredible stories, and we're going to be talking with him on Thursday during Connections. So a couple of things there that I just wanted to point out. Now, coming up next, who do we have? We have whom?
Lise Breen. And she is an historical researcher and has some really interesting things to share with us about how the slavery impacted commerce and some of the people that were involved in slavery in Cape Ann's development over the years.
All right. Later on, we'll have Bill Newell. We'll be talking with Dave Rattigan, a writer, a reporter, a comedian, and he's going to give his unique perspective on things. We'll be looking forward to that coming up in just a little while. And again, please email us with suggestions, comments, complaints at msonewssports@gmail.com. msonewssports@gmail.com.
Or joshanald@verizon.net.
There we go. All right, so let's take a break, shall we? We'll get out of the way, and then come back with Josh's next guest.
People come in, take a seat. You're really in for a treat at Sylvan Street. A great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. We'll treat you right, day or night. Satisfy your appetite. Drink and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Catch a game with friends, meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Looking to score big on your savings this season? Open a CD savings or money market account at Institution for Savings. This is the perfect time to earn funds for your future. and our rates are among the best. Stop by one of our offices in Amesbury, Beverly, Boxford, Gloucester, Hamilton, Ipswich, Middleton, Newburyport, Rockport, Rowley, Salem, Salisbury, and Topsfield. Or visit us online at institutionforsavings.com. Member FDIC, DIF. North Shore Today is MSO News Sports Daily Local News Podcast with news from all around the North Shore. The Post also shares a note on the weather, local photos, notices, and our video of the day. Check it out daily, North Shore Today.
Welcome back to Connections. Our next guest is Lise Breen. Lise, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much.
Well, you are a historical researcher, and you've done a lot of research about a number of different talks. But in particular, you've seen some of the origins of the commerce of slavery as it impacted Cape Ann. And I know that you're going to be a presenter at a symposium at one of the local museums here in town on is it February 29th?
That's right.
Leap Day. And so tell us about that and tell us about your research, please.
Okay, well, the panel at the Cape Ann Museum is on Saturday, February 29th. It's all afternoon. It's in conjunction with the National Park Service and with the Terra Foundation. People who will be there alongside of me, I'm thrilled to say, is one of the top scholars in this field. Her name is Joanne Pope Mellish, and she wrote a book called Disowning Slavery in New England, and she really talks about the way we have ignored our past and the contributions of enslaved people to New England's economy and culture. Also presenting will be Cabrilla Baumgartner, and she is a scholar who's putting together all kinds of finding aids regarding Essex County slavery, and she's also written and is in the process of writing books on people who grew up the first black attorney who grew up in Salem.
You know, when we think about the issue of slavery in America, there's a kind of a natural preconception that, well, the North were the abolitionists and the people south of the Mason-Dixon line, they were the people who had the slaves. But in reality, there were a lot of people in the North, if you will, who supported and made their living by the commerce of dealing with slavery trade, from the boat builders to the merchants to the manufacturers. Is that right?
Absolutely, absolutely. So I came to this project actually reading a poem by our most famous poet, Charles Olson, who said that the cargoes they brought back were black to Gloucester. And I had no idea what he was talking about. And I asked a fellow researcher what this meant, and he said, stay away from the topic, which set me on it. So what I found was that absolutely, the enslaved people helped build our city and our port, and Cape Ann is not simply a society of self-made, self-reliant fishermen, but these people, they dug our foundations, they built our stone walls, they built our vessels, as you said, they mowed our salt marsh hay, they ran our cider and grain mill, they built hog pens and chopped firewood and served as stevedores. And the women and girls did all that domestic labor. They spun the wool and made the cheese. And they were forced, really, to take care of the drudge work that colonial life demanded until they were worn out. And then our captains and merchants and all of Gloucester's wealth, really, accrued largely from the profits made by shipping that poor quality salted cod and hake and mackerel to feed slaves at southern ports. as well as the West Indies, Suriname, and Brazil, well into the 19th century, because sugar slavery really made our world go round. And the other thing that I found is that even after slavery ends in Massachusetts, which is in the mid-1780s, our captains continued in this business. So what they were doing was participating in the legal domestic slave trade by ferrying enslaved people from, say, a northern southern port like Richmond, Virginia, to the deep south. So I have, for instance, a manifest that's an account of the things on board a vessel, on board a schooner from Gloucester, with a Gloucester captain who is carrying about 60 enslaved people from Richmond, Virginia to New Orleans. And most of these people are children taken away from their mothers. And the manifest lists their names, their ages, their height, their complexion. And it's very, very chilling to read. So we know our captains are participating in a domestic slave trade. And we also know that they were participating in an illegal slave trade right up until the Civil War. And I think that's the most explosive part of my research.
Now, in the lead up to the Civil War, there was an act passed that prohibited the transporting or selling of slaves. So if you were a captain and you had slaves in your cargo, or you were stashing them away somewhere, and you were boarded by the British Navy or the United States Navy, and you were found to be transporting slaves, you would be arrested.
That's right. And more than just arrested, it was considered an act of piracy. And by 1819, it was considered a capital crime. And in other words, you could be executed for participating. But our captain pretty much ignored this law because the patrols were not effective. We didn't have enough patrols along the coast of Africa to prevent this trade. The British vessels were a little more successful at this. So our captains, with pretty much impunity, went along with this. We've got a handful of documented cases, and I should point out that these families were associated with the most prominent men in Gloucester, and these were among the most prominent families in Gloucester, and just about all of them were associated with the Universalist Church, the founding church of Universalism in America. So it's extraordinary information. In some cases, these people, our captains and crews, were sailing to Brazil and then actually taking out advertisements to charter or rent or sell their vessels to Africa, pick up enslaved people, and then disembark them on the shores of Brazil, and then later in Cuba. So this was a big business, and
Ladies, Rick Moore of MSNO Sports. I have a question. First of all, this is fascinating because, again, with history, you know, the victors write the history, and apparently, in this part of the country, that stuff was written right out of our histories because it's certainly not taught in school. And I imagine that that is something that ought to be, or at least, you know, we should start letting people in the area know about that history. But I do have a question. Have you come across, to this point, have you come across any Schindler's List-type heroic actions by any of our Cape Anners?
No. You know, not quite to that degree. There were two anti-slavery societies on Cape Ann established in the late 1830s, right around 1839, just as the abolition movement is growing. But this is the same time that our sea captains are engaged in illegal activity, slaving. And it's interesting to note that these two anti-slavery societies are in small villages on Cape Ann. They're in Anisquam, and there's another one mostly made up of two families in West Gloucester. So they're far away from the downtown Gloucester with its Mother Universalist Church, and they're less pressured and they're able to support an anti-slavery activity to some degree. There was also one radical in Rockport who was perhaps my most esteemed person in this work, and he was a Universalist minister in Rockport, but he was there just for a couple of years. What he did was he hosted an anti-slavery convention in Rockport, and he allowed a black abolitionist, whose name is Charles Raymond from Salem, to speak. So that was wonderful.
And they broke that up with a smoke bomb of the day, is that right?
Well, that was later.
Oh, that was later, okay.
And that was a white abolitionist speaking after the Civil War had started. 6 months after the Civil War had started, in December of 1862? Yes. So Parker Pillsbury was this ardent abolitionist, and his attempts to come and speak in Rockport were thwarted, and the churches closed their doors to him. But this time, after the Civil War had started, he did speak, and the church was blocks away from a cotton mill. So I believe that someone who was associated with that cotton mill threw a small bit of coal and paper and string tied together so it would smoke through a window. And it did cause a bit of panic, and the abolitionist lecture was interrupted. But then people did regroup, and the lecture continued. The following day, however, half the people in the congregation took up their things and, you know, their pillows at the pews and left. Maybe they thought it was too dangerous to be associated with that church. I don't really know their reasons, but they did leave the congregation. So even after the war had started, there were mixed feelings about the war. You know, many of our merchants had relationships with the South. And in fact, when Frederick Douglass came to Cape Ann in the after Lincoln's assassination, he lectured Cape Ann merchants that they were not to resume their relations with the Southern business owners, and that it would be treasonous to do so. It looks like they just went ahead and did that, but.
Well, it's interesting when Rick brought up about what we don't teach in school and everything. The South and the North still see the Civil War as in very different views, too. There are those who see it was simply about slavery, but it wasn't. There were multiple factors that caused Southern states to secede from the Union, not the least of which were states' rights versus a strong federal government, taxation, commerce, lots of different issues. But it wasn't, it took on a role of it being about slavery. Why? Because Abraham Lincoln issued the Emancipation Proclamation, and he did that largely to keep the other countries out, because if there were overtures made by the Southern leaders to England, and if England had come in on the side of the South, we might have two countries now. And once Lincoln issued the Emancipation Proclamation, he kept France and England out from supporting the South, and then they could essentially beat them because they had much greater industrial capacity.
Well, I would suggest that slavery was underpinning all of that.
Yes, of course it was.
Yeah, and all of the question about states' rights. You know, but your point about the interrelation between the North and South is so interesting. And for instance, the Sargent House Museum, which is here in Gloucester, has a portrait of, or two portraits of a man, of a couple, a married couple. Their names are Samuel and Caroline Gilman. And they grew up in Massachusetts, and one actually spent time at the house. And Samuel became the first Unitarian minister in Charleston. And he kept slaves. There are photographs of his slave quarters attached to his home in Charleston. And he died before his widow, Carolyn, who also grew white, and says, I can't believe that my slaves are leaving me. And this is well after the Emancipation Proclamation. This is in December of 1865. So she is shocked. And she has relatives who are abolitionists. So we have this incredible connection with the South. We cannot discuss ourselves as separate. Another case would be, in fact, the Sargent family itself, because Winthrop Sargent, who grew up in Gloucester, became the first territorial governor of the Mississippi Territories. And he had plantations with hundreds of slaves. And he sold 40 in one day in 1813 for $24,000.
Wow.
Lise, what's the best way to get more information about this, or to contact you, or to what you are doing about this? Because we have to go to our next interview, but I think people would want to know more information about this and how to get hold of you, or you know, to get more information.
Well, they certainly can contact me. I'm always happy to answer questions. I give many public talks, and I hope I'll be able to have this all in a book form, too. There's also a wonderful website that is developing called The Atlantic Black Box with Meadow Dibble. And some of this information will be up on that. So maybe some of your listeners would like to contact the Cape Ann Museum and see if they can go to the panel on February 29th.
Great. Well, thank you very much for being a guest on Connections, and we wish you well in your presentation on the 29th, and hope folks take time to follow up on your research, and hopefully your book will be out for us soon.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Lise.
Coming up next, of course, we'll have Bill Newell chatting with old friend Dave Radigan here on Connections on MSO New Sports.
You'll love the Bradford Tavern in Rowley, as they feature a menu to please everyone. Start your meal with your choice from a dozen delicious appetizers. There are also soups and fresh salads. Dinner selections include burgers, sirloin tips, chicken parmesan, chicken piccata, and then there's seafood, clams, haddocks, salmon, lobsters, and fish tacos, plus a wide selection of sandwiches and wraps. Let the Bradford Tavern host your events or functions set in unique spaces. Open 6 days a week, Tuesday through Sunday. The Bradford Tavern, Route 133 Rowley, and bradfordtavern.com.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. Professional builders and remodelers choose Anderson Windows more than any other brand in the United States. They do so because Anderson Windows and patio doors offer beautiful natural wood interiors, low maintenance exteriors, and outstanding energy efficiency. See the complete line of Anderson Windows at any of our three locations in Beverly, North Reading, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Check out live sporting events on MSO New Sports. and exclusive interviews with coaches and players. When it comes to local news and sports, MSO News Sports keeps you connected to the big stories. Dave Radigan is joining us, and Dave, welcome. Good to be. Thanks for joining us here on Connections.
Thank you for having me, Bill. It's nice to talk to you as always.
Dave, people will not believe what we've chosen to talk about here. I don't think, but what's that?
Such a happy topic to talk about. Right.
Yeah, coronavirus, because for a variety of reasons. I mean, it's something that we hear about. But, Dave, you were telling me that there are a lot of coronavirus mentions, if you will, on social media connecting it to Corona beer.
Well, you know, you think about it. It's like here we've got this public health issue. I don't know if it's an emergency. Well, I don't know. Yeah, it's an issue. It's certainly an emergency in China. Killed more than 300 people worldwide, 10,000, an estimated 10,000 people or more have been infected with it. It's shut down airports. They just shut down Boston this week. But the big impact for most of us, the first time we heard of it, was this near unlimited supply of jokes on social media, all based on the concept that you drank too much Corona and now you feel sick.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it speaks to... You know, that what other, I mean, if you're, Dave, if you're the people at Corona Brewery, if it's called Corona Brewery and not some other limited.
I'm sending something to China and saying, hey, what are you doing here? What are you doing to us? In the World Health Organization, you know, whenever you've got something here, as I told you before, you know, whenever there's a public health outbreak like this, everyone just starts asking that question, what's the difference between an epidemic and a pandemic?
Do they really ask themselves that, Dave?
I always do, because they use it to change it and it's not right.
So what is the difference between an epidemic and a pandemic?
Size. An epidemic tends to be epicenter, located in an area, like we have an epidemic in Massachusetts. But if it goes the whole country, then it's a pandemic, geographic spread, or worldwide, it's a pandemic.
Yeah.
But I think for a lot of things like the, I'm going to guess if I go back and I check the influenza epidemic of 1918, which, as you may have heard, might know, killed more people than more Americans than died in World War One that year. Hmm. I think that was called an epidemic, and I'm going to guess it was a pandemic.
Yeah, you and I were lucky to survive that one.
Maybe you, because you were a young kid. But.
Yeah, I was very young at the time, and very vulnerable to that strain, if I'm not mistaken.
This is a really serious issue, but it's interesting how many jokes come up, and some of it obviously is whistling past the graveyard, and it's probably a lot easier to joke now when we've got relatively few cases, certainly serious to the people whose family members have died, but a relatively small number by public health figures compared to the flu, which just kills thousands of people annually.
Mm-hmm.
But again, we don't know where this one's going, so we'll make fun of it. We'll make fun of it and hope that it doesn't become a lot more serious.
And we really don't mean to be making fun of it at all, because it's not really funny. But I mean, it's got the coronavirus, and how often have you heard? Yeah, if you've got a virus, name it something other than Corona. I mean, it's like,
Corona's an actual scientific term. It has to do with the shape of the virus and the fact that, I guess, under a microscope, it looks like it's got a little halo on it. It's in the same family, I think, as SARS, or similarities to SARS and MERS. I don't know if you remember those two famous things.
I do remember SARS. I mean, what is Sam Adams going to come out with a winter SARS lager? I mean, no.
Right.
No, they won't. They won't do that.
Ordinary summer.
Yeah.
What's that?
I mean, that's what I'm speaking about. I mean, they're going to taint Corona. I mean, is there somebody that will walk into a package store and say, Corona, maybe not this time, you know?
You know, that's funny. I bet, you know, it might make an interesting story. Not that I will do it, because it sounds like too much work. But it might be interesting to go to just a handful of package stores and find out whether or not Corona sales are up or they're down, simply because of the awareness.
Yeah, no, I know. Well, give me an example. Do you have an example of a joke that was on social media regarding beer, coronavirus?
They're all based on that same idea that, you know, I drank too much and then I get the coronavirus.
Oh, okay.
Or something like that. You know, it's all kind of based around the Corona beer. And I'll tell you the good thing about this, Bill. The good thing about it is, there is a lot of fear. There's no vaccine, and there's even if they find it quickly, it's not expected to be available until next year, and or next flu season, let's say that. But one thing about it is you prevent the virus the same way you prevent the flu. You wash your hands. You cough under your sleeve. You don't shake hands with people. All of the same precautions. Which is a good idea, particularly this season, because this season, the flu season has been virulent, the flu virus has been virulent, and there have been a lot of cases. So if ever there is a good time to think about precautions, this is it.
You know, Dave, I was in Boston on Monday, and I was on a very crowded Green Line train. I mean, a very crowded Green Line train. Where you're right up against people, and you know, I couldn't help but think about all this stuff that you're bringing up here, and I'm thinking, what struck me was, is anybody wearing a mask? And I'm thinking, is that a good thing they're wearing a mask or a bad thing if they're wearing it?
Right.
You know, really, I mean,
right.
No one was, and not even anybody signed, as far as I'm concerned. You know what I mean? Because you got the flu and you have flu, and then you've got the coronavirus to contend with.
Yeah, and hopefully people, if they've got the flu, they're staying home, they're taking care of themselves, they're resting, getting plenty of fluids, all of those things. And staying home is important because, you know, how many times do you bring, you know, you're sick, you go to school, you go to work, you bring your illness with you, and then the next thing you know, everybody's sick. And obviously we don't want to deal with this new coronavirus.
Yeah. Hey, Dave. I always love to hear stories of brushes with greatness. Now, you on stage as a comedian. I mean, you not only have had brushes of greatness, but you've embraced greatness. You've seen great people, comedians on stage, and you were about to do a show. I understand just coming up soon with Rachel Dratch, who is starring in that Super Bowl commercial of Smat Pack. And of Saturday Night Live fame, but the gig got canceled because she's not available, right?
Yeah, it actually got moved to April. Oh my goodness! I'm not going to get the date right. It got moved to April.
That's fine. We don't need to know more than that. April's fine for us.
I'll be back. They had like 500. They had 500 seats sold. Tony V is hosting it. Accidentally on purpose is doing some improv, and I think Rachel Dratch, who's fantastic, was going to be I think that she was going to be coming in to do a little bit of improv as part of the show, and they said they needed a couple comedians, so they got me, and we were all excited about it, and now they've moved it to April 3rd. So the time will come, because by the way, here's why. Not because she got sick, because she didn't get sick, but because she got called to Saturday Night Live. So I don't know if we're supposed to tell people this, but if you want to see Rachel Dratch, she'll be on Saturday Night Live this Saturday night, and I will be staying home and not working.
And that was all for a benefit. That was a benefit show that you were talking about. Hey, I got a quick question for you. This is my last question. My wife asked this question. So we watch these commercials, the Smat Pack, the Hyundai, whatever it was, Kia, whatever it was. But and we say, oh, gosh, that's funny. You know what I mean? We put it up on our website the other day. It reminded me of an SNL bit on Dunkin' Donuts that was a funny bit with the Boston accent. How does that play outside of New England, do you think, or even outside of Boston? I mean, what do people do when what do they think about that?
I think they – I know where you're trying to steer me. I'm not going there.
I don't know. I'm not trying to steer you anywhere. I'm just asking, I mean, do they say, those Boston people are crazy, or do they think it's funny, or do they just think, oh, what, you know? They must have tested that stuff, right?
It's like any foreign accent. They hear it and they think, oh, that's just dreamy. and they fall in love. That's what they think.
The accent of romance. Yeah.
They think of JFK, even though most of them don't know who JFK is.
Yeah.
And no, they think of Kennedy and Camelot, or they think of Charles Winchester III from MASH. Or maybe they think of Jimmy Fallon and Rachel Dratch doing the Boston boyfriend girlfriend.
Yeah, that was a good bit too. All right, Dave, thanks so much.
Let me do this. So let me just plug the David K. Johnson Foundation and Samantha's Harvest are the two charities benefiting from the Larkham Show. And I looked it up. It's April 3rd.
Gotcha. All right, Dave, thank you for your time, and we'll be in touch soon.
Sounds good.
That is funny guy Dave Radigan with us here on Connections.
Yeah, thank you, man. Dave is something else. He always finds this peculiar look, and I love that commercial that was on the Pack Your Car, the Hyundai commercial, and the Haba. It's a ghost car, and you know, the fact that they hammed it up. Those guys were all from Boston. All the actors are from Boston.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and so they know what the Boston accent is, and so they kind of deliver. I think most of them are. They kind of did that, you know, on purpose, just made it outrageous. And the one that cracked me up was the guy who plays Jack. What's his name? Jack. Oh my God, I'm having a brain cramp. Jack Ryan. He plays Jack Ryan on Netflix, I think it is, and. Tom Clancy's Jack Ryan, John Krasinski, and John Krasinski is from Boston. he kind of overdid it, and it just cracked me up because you see him on Jack Ryan, and he's this big, you know, CIA guy, and he's tough as nails, and he, you know, he has a Midwest. There's no accent, you know, it's just the American talk, and but to see him do that in a comedy sketch, I loved it. That was so cool. Well, we had a busy hour. A little more information on the Merrimack River. Eagle Festival that's coming up on February 15. You can go massaudubon.org, and just it comes right up there. It's presented by Mass Audubon's Joppa Flats Education Center in Parker River National Wildlife Refuge. It will be in Saturday, February 15, Newburyport and Amesbury. It's a full day of fun, indoor and outdoor activities celebrating the return of the bald eagles. Learn more about these magnificent birds, as well as many other amazing raptors, such as snowy owls, and why the local habitat is so important to them. And a tremendous website. Going to be talking with David Moon of that as well. Hopefully, we'll have an interview with somebody about that. But again, on Thursday of this week, we'll also be talking with Jim Berry about the Ipswich Winter Walk that will take place, I believe it's on the following Monday. I think it's February 17 on President's Day. And Jim is, as I said, an encyclopedia of information with respect to the habitats and all that's going on, and some of the history and so on. He's actually compiled a brand new encyclopedia of birds in the area that he will talk about, too. So I think it's going to take care of it. I want to thank our guests today, Ken Reel and Lise Breen, and, of course, Dave Radigan. And things that we're going to be discussing in the future, again, you need to send your ideas to us at msonewsports@gmail.com. We'll be glad to follow up on things. No news, no new news during this hour on the missing Gloucester woman. And also, no news in this past hour from 10 to 11 here on this Tuesday morning on the Iowa caucuses. So that's where we remain. And you got people lined up?
I'm working on people for next week's shows.
All right, that's Josh Arnold on behalf of Josh and our producer and engineer, Bill Proposkin, and of course, Bill Newell. I'm Rick Moore. This has been Connections. Next time, 10 a.m. on Thursday. This is msonewsports.com.